Yes, indeed, everybody. Welcome into our Treasure Chest Thursday. Me and Mike Dottillier here at the Game Bar and Grill at the Treasure Chest Casino in Canabro. You can stop by, say hey, we'll be here till 7 o'clock, and then getting ready for Thursday night football. We weren't here last week, Mike, because we were dealing with Thursday night football in the Dome. And
well, we hope it's a better game than that one.
Exactly, because that was rough going into that halftime, and it was like, you knew things weren't looking good for the black and gold squad against Denver, and Sean got his, I guess you could say, revenge on the team.
Yeah, whatever. He had the better team. But tonight will be interesting. I saw the Vikings. Looks as though T.J. Hockenson will miss another week.
Right, still
He's coming off the ACL injury, which normally is a 10-month injury to come back from. And, you know, he's 10 months, so he's pretty close to coming back. And we'll see what happens with Puka Nacua, who has been – put on the active roster. Does he play tonight?
Yeah.
And I think they'll work him out to see if Puka can play. And all I know is if that guy is healthy, he can play.
And Cooper Kupp's back too, right?
Cooper Kupp's back. And is this maybe a little showcase to see, if anybody's looking for a receiver?
It's pretty wild to me because I think the Rams, I don't consider out of contention yet. So I'm curious as why they'd be sellers right now.
I don't know, but
you know, the NFC West there is, you know, no runaway for sure.
No, and that's a couple of receivers out there. Mike Williams, certainly with the Jets, and Deontay Johnson with the Panthers, and he made it known a couple of days ago, man, I don't want to be here no more. I get it. You know, I get that part. After the team got ran over by Marcus Mariota. And looks as though Marcus may get another whirl at it. Because Jaden Daniels did not practice today. He was watcher.
Charlie's going to need to change his pick six pick.
No, he can't do that, Charlie. you can't get that
man
out. But, it's so interesting. And then last night, man, to watch the Pelicans and doing it without Zion. And we didn't know until after the game with DeJounte Murray.
Right, the high from the win and then the low a couple minutes afterwards finding
what?
Out. Right.
And so he's out indefinitely. And it'll be interesting because he couldn't have come on this afternoon. But I did get in touch with Dr. David Elias from Ortho LA.
Yeah.
Him not treating the injury, seeing the fracture, knowing which one. He said conservatively, guys, 2 months.
Oof.
So 8 to 9 weeks, however you count your months. But he said that, you know, 2 months would be in that range. Now, he's always tempers it with young athletes can come back a little quicker than the regular individual, but he suspected that this would be an 8-week injury.
Yeah, hopefully there's nothing too serious going on and everything goes as according to plan here.
I'll put it to you this way, if it's going to happen, and it did, I'd much rather happen it early late in the year. But last night, man, we got to see the young kid and Yves Missi. Man.
Very impressive outing for his first time.
We heard a little bit about it in preseason, but we all know what preseason's all about is the biggest mirage in the world.
Yeah, exactly.
If it's pro football, if it's the NBA, you name it, how many guys look good, you know, in the Cactus Leagues. And they ain't playing in the majors. So it's one of those type of deals, but I was impressed last night with Missi, not only with his run sort of up and down the court, because for a big man, he does run the court very well. His defense was really good, and he got some pops just right over the top. Hey, throw it up! I can dunk that thing.
Yeah, so far the center problems for the Pelicans look to be a little over-exaggerated at the moment. I know it was just one game.
I was going to say, we ain't seen him up against
the stud.
Right,
it's like pump the brakes, like with the Saints after two games.
Exactly. We didn't see him against the stud, big man. So, but Missi was impressive last night. And to hear him talk afterwards, you can tell. And it's funny, yesterday we had Jen Hale on, and Jen spoke about, and she was getting this from the Pelicans coaches, of his intelligence level, and that, okay, he's new to the game and picking up everything so quickly. And she felt that that's what really impressed the coaches. Okay, physically, you can see that guy can play.
Gifted, right.
Eventually. But how quickly can you pick all this up? And she was like, they really stressed, he is picking up new things and fast out on the court. And we got a little bit of a glimpse of it. And, again, with first-year guys, you got to temper it sometimes because, you know, you might see a really good game and then maybe one that's not so well. But, man, if this is what's to come down the line, you got somebody. And not just – I'm not talking about just about today. I'm talking about down the line.
Future building block, right.
He might be that guy. He might be the big man that you were looking for.
We're going to take a break. When we get back, we'll be talking more Pelicans. Jake Madison of the Locked On Pelicans podcast will join us. Also this hour, we'll be talking Tigers, LSU at Texas A&M. The voice of the Aggies, Andrew Monaco, will also join us. Then in the 5 o'clock hour, Dalton Wasserman of PFF, Pro Football Focus, will join us, help us break down Saints and Chargers. Then at 6:25, we'll talk a little baseball. Former MLB pitcher Scott Sanders will join us, and we'll do a little World Series preview as the Yankees and Dodgers get ready to square off tomorrow night. We're going to take a break. Be back with more sports talk here at the Treasure Chest Casino. Stay tuned right here on WWL. Welcome back into sports talk here at the Treasure Chest Casino. 7 o'clock tonight, and then Thursday night football takes over. But right now, we've been talking about the Pelicans' big victory opening night in the Smoothie King Center. And to help us break that down, Jake Madison of the Locked On Pelicans podcast. Jake, always appreciate the time. Thank you. And how was last night in the Smoothie King Center for you?
The Lord giveth and the Lord taketh away right after the game.
Is that not the most Pelicans thing we've ever seen? A big opening night win without Zion Williamson, but it comes at a pretty high price, losing DeJounte Murray for an indeterminate amount of time right now, which is definitely going to be minimum, I'd say, 6 weeks, looking probably more like 8 when it comes to it. But it was fun to get that atmosphere. People are ready for a big Pelican season. I think there's a lot of expectations this year. And look, at least they got the win rather than losing and having a big injury, too.
Good news, too, today. It looks as though Zion full practice today. But last night, if you didn't walk away and say, man, that Eve Messi guy looked like we got something here. Now, again, you're going to go through the growing pains with him. And it was so impressive to see him. He looked like he belonged, Jake. And a lot of times for rookies, they sort of, you know, the square peg in the round hole. He looked as though he belonged at the NBA level.
He did, and that's what you're looking for with a guy like that. This project, when they drafted him, but they really feel his ability is going to shine through sooner rather than later, and it was a big part of why they drafted him. And I think when they look at looking for a big man to pair next to Zion Williamson, ideally, yes, you want one that shoots three-pointers, but big men that defend the rim and shoot threes, there's maybe two guys in the NBA. So you've got to look for a vertical spacer. And that's what you saw from Eve Messi out there. When he subbed in, the offense opened up. You saw them running a bunch of pick and rolls with him and DeJounte Murray, and that really put the Chicago Bulls defense on the back foot. It just added another dimension that the Pelicans weren't having out there when they started Daniel Tice. So the second Messi came in, the game shifted offensively, and then it also shifted defensively with some of the blocks that he had and the rim protection that he had. And when he was playing more in the second half, when those defenders, whether it's Herb Jones, whether it's Murray, Brandon Ingram, even CJ McCollum was great last night, when you know you have rim protection like that in the back, you can gamble on steals a little bit more. And New Orleans started forcing a ton of turnovers in the second half of that game. They finished with 29 fast break points, 30 points off of turnovers. And I think a big part of that is because they knew they had Messi back there. We can talk about the athleticism that we saw, the shot blocking, all of that. To me, the most impressive part was the intelligence that you saw from him, the way he knew where to go. This is a guy that coaches rave about his ability to pick up the game, to process information, and then turn that around and utilize what he's learned out there on the basketball court. My big concern with him when he was drafted would be, can he stay on the court or is he going to foul too much? Because rookie centers tend to do that. In that first preseason game, he picked up about 5 fouls in 2 minutes or so, and it seemed like that might be a problem. You have all the talent in the world, but if you can't stay out on the court, it doesn't really matter. He only had 2 fouls in last night's game. To go from being a foul machine in your first preseason game when you're playing worse players to going up against admittedly a not very good Chicago Bulls team and only commit 2 fouls while making that type of defensive impact, that's truly the most impressive thing for me, and I would not be shocked if we end up seeing him start sooner rather than later.
Jake, it's funny. Just talking about that, Jen Hale came on with me yesterday, and she brought up, in hearing it from the coaches, his ability to do something he hadn't done before and process it so quickly, the intelligence level. And she was talking about the coaches were like, wow, you know, he's like a sponge. He picks it up, and then he can process what you telling him in a practice session into a game. But she said, now you got to see it. The other part she brought up yesterday, and we got a little glimpse of it, was how would Brandon Ingram react to a turbulent offseason? Okay, you kind of caught in the vortex of the tornado here. A lot of things happening from a financial standpoint, not getting the deal, not getting traded, a lot of rumors out there. Man, he played lights out last night also.
He was great, and he won the game for the Pelicans in the third quarter. Misi had an impact, but the reason that they won that game and pulled ahead was Brandon Ingram's play in the third and fourth quarter. It took him a little bit, I think, to kind of find his rhythm. He only played one preseason game. You could see some of the rust on him, and then he got into a groove. And midway through the third quarter, the start of the fourth quarter, you saw the Chicago Bulls roll out a zone defense because what they were doing before wasn't working. They switched to a zone, and the Pelicans had a couple of trips on the offensive end where they didn't score at all. And then Brandon Ingram took a pull-up three-pointer at the top of the three-point line, made that, and then that immediately kind of shifted the game. The way you beat a zone defense is you shoot out of it. And him taking that three, a shot that he didn't really take much of last year, made it. And then that started spacing the court. He made another three during that stretch too. And then all of a sudden you saw the court open up and you saw him knifing into the heart of that defense, trying to post up smaller players, cutting in there, getting the ball and getting into the teeth of the defense, forcing them to collapse. And then he was able to kick out to open three-point shooters. It's exactly the type of play from Brandon Ingram that you want to see, that the Pelicans have really been pushing him to try and adopt this past off season. They want a better shot profile that's more shots at the rim, more three-pointers, fewer mid-range shots. And he's Brandon Ingram. He's going to take those mid-range shots, and he'll make those mid-range shots too. But those aren't high-efficiency looks. And when he started playing that high-efficiency basketball, that makes you go, oh, he and Zion Williamson can coexist. Now, it's one game. We've seen Ingram do this before. Then the next game take no three-pointers. So it still is a little bit of TBD if they can truly coexist. But when he broke that zone defense for the Chicago Bulls, that's when the Pelicans won that game. And it was him taking those type of shots that the team wants him to take.
Jake, looking at this team, upcoming four-game road trip after the home opener, a little bit unique. You have two games in Portland Friday, Sunday, and then Tuesday, Wednesday, you're at Golden State. Hopefully that helps them get some rest with these games, because obviously not having to travel all four matchups is a little bit of a benefit there. But what do you see coming up in this Portland and Golden State back-to-back stint here?
You know, particularly against Portland, it's going to be Eve Misi. They're going to need to rely on him a lot here. They have a pretty good center in DeAndre Ayton. They just drafted Donovan Klingham out of UConn, ninth overall. They're pretty big down low, and they're going to try and utilize that size advantage. So if Misi can come in and defend the rim and at least just hold his own against those kind of centers, and this is where we might see him regress a little bit. I don't know if he'll play as well as he did against the Chicago Bulls. That's going to be kind of the eye-opening moment for me where you go, okay, he's definitely a future starter, but not in subsequent seasons, this year at a certain point, if he can handle those type of players. I think you can definitely see him do that. Other than that, Portland's a little bit weak. They have some guard play, but you still have Herb Jones. It sounds like Zion Williamson will be good to go here, which is going to put pressure on their defense, and they are not a good defensive team. Those should be wins for the Pelicans, but going 1-1 would be okay too, because it is still a little bit tough to win on the road, and New Orleans is now missing two of their best six players in DeJounte Murray and Trey Murphy. The Warriors one will be interesting. That's a team that isn't what they used to be when they were on their, you know, their dynasty run, but they still have Steph Curry. They just added Buddy Hield, former Pelican, and they can shoot threes. And if you're making your threes, you can win a game on any given night, even if you're a less talented team. The good news is the Pelicans took 37 three-point attempts in the game last night, and they've been pushing that number to try and be 40. That's what they're looking for. And if they can keep taking those threes, making those threes, they'll stay in the running with the Golden State Warriors, and you don't just lose out on the math when it comes to it. They make threes, you make twos. You'll lose, even if you're going shot for shot with them, because one's worth an extra point. If they keep up the three-point shooting, and that's definitely been a big emphasis for them this season, you know, there's a chance they can go 4-0 on this road trip.
Jake, always appreciate your time. Definitely check out all your work at the Locked On Pelicans podcast, a daily subscription for that service. And sure, appreciate you, and we'll be talking more Pel soon.
Thank you, Jake.
Of course. Thanks for having me on, y'all.
All right. For all things Pelicans, subscribe to Locked On Pelicans on the Odyssey app, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. Going to take a break. When we get back, we'll be breaking down some LSU football versus Texas A&M. The voice of the Aggies, Andrew Monaco, joins us right after this. Stay tuned on WWL. We are live at the Treasure Chest Casino.
In case we haven't met, I'm Dino Colombo. I represent people hurt by a truck. It's what we do every day. Justice isn't just a word, it's your right. We'll stand up for you when others can't. Hurt by a truck? Call Colombo Law.
Rocking and rolling here this Thursday at the Treasure Chest Casino. You can stop by, say hey to me and Mike. We are at the Game Bar and Grill.
Yeah, come
getting
on
ready
see
for
us,
Thursday
man.
Night Football.
Yeah, we in the back at the Game Bar and Grill. Man, they got a slew of TVs. You want to do a little gaming, put a little money on that? It's right around the corner with it. So get you a bite to eat and watch Thursday Night Football. And you can hear that game live right here on the Big 870 WWL as the Vikings and the Rams. And, boy, when they set this up, man, I said, man, that's a really good Thursday night game until I seen that injury list for the Rams. It was kind of lengthy.
Speaking of injury lists, we're still waiting for the Saints to put their practice report out for today. When we get that, we'll obviously bring it to you as soon as possible. Right now, though, we're talking about another big football game Saturday, 14th-ranked Texas A&M hosting the 8th-ranked LSU Tigers, 6:30 Saturday night. Andrew Monaco, the voice of Texas A&M, joins us now. Definitely appreciate the time, Andrew. How you been doing?
Doing just great, and I'm not sure Saturday can get here fast enough. Should be electric in Kyle Field.
Andrew, I agree with you, bud. You know, I was talking to Bobby Abier about this. I said, Bob, this is a playoff game inside of a playoff game. Because you can see what's at stake here for the winner. Man, you're going to have a pretty clear path here. The loser is not out of it, but you might have to make, you know, go around a few fences and stuff like that to get around. But and yet they don't need no more hype for a game when LSU plays Texas A&M.
No, you're right. The margin of error, look, you don't have much of it in the SEC, and you it gets infinitely smaller if you lose this one because you're challenged then. I'll just let you know for the Aggies. Still have to go to South Carolina, still have to visit Auburn, and there's that other team just down the road that you got to play where normally A&M and LSU have played around Thanksgiving. We've just moved this up 1 month. But the stakes are high, and I think that's what makes it fun about the 12-team playoff, because you're going to have a lot of these.
Yeah, and Andrew,
that the games may not be as important, right? And we're finding out that maybe there's more teams in this position, but it certainly makes for a fun one this Saturday for sure.
Andrew, and just to think how both teams started, you weren't Usain Bolt coming out of the blocks. That was a stumble early on for both LSU and for Texas A&M. When you look at the straw that turns the drink for them on offense, would you say that's Le'Veon Bell here? Because I, in my opinion, if you can stop the running game and say, you know what, Connor Wegman, hey, if you're going to beat me, but I'm not going to let you pound at me, you know, 30, right. 35 times. They're still trying to bring down the – he was A-chain back then, but he's A-chain now. They're still trying to tackle him in that game. But I think that it comes down to can LSU's defense – stop Le'Veon Moss, who is a really, really talented back.
Yeah, and I think if LSU does that, guys, I think if you have to make Texas A&M one-dimensional, advantage LSU. And I think Le'Veon Moss has really been that guy. Look, they lost Reuben Owens, who was going into his second season in camp. Who was going to step up? Le'Veon Moss, with a nice little wrinkle when you add Amari Daniels as well. A couple of guys that could have left and did not. They were going to be part of that running back stable. Le'Veon is stronger this year. He's never lost his speed. Same thing with Amari, but stronger. And I think his yards after contact, when that 4-yard gain becomes an 8-yard gain, when that no gain becomes a +4, I think that helps the Aggies and it becomes third and manageable. I'm with you. And the result of Le'Veon being so good is the result of this offensive line is better than it has been the last 2 years. I think Connor has trusted this offensive line. They've allowed 7 sacks. They've gotten to Connor 3 times. And I know it's even fewer what LSU's offensive line has to Garrett Nussmeier, who's had an outstanding season. But that running game, to be able to trust that. And I thought we saw a little bit last week against Mississippi State, a little bit of Colin Klein and the trust in that line, that on some of those third and longs where you thought were obvious pass downs, they trusted Le'Veon to go get that first down, or Amari Daniels to run a nice little changeup. I think that shows the confidence that they have. But Le'Veon Moss, I think, has been a little bit of a revelation for the Aggies and one of the key reasons why they are where they are this season.
Andrew, I saw him at Manning Passing Academy. And, you know, Archie and I were on the golf court. We got to see Connor Wegman throw the football. And, man, we come away. Hey, man, he was not throwing against pressure, but he was impressive throwing the football. He was accurate, a nice, quick, over-the-top delivery. And we've seen sort of glimpses of that. Kind of give us your look at Connor, where there are times you say, man, he is impressive throwing the football. And then other times, maybe not so much.
What are you thinking?
Yes.
You're going, Connor, wait. that was kind of Mississippi State sometimes in a nutshell. And Mike and I talked about this. Like, you've got to have the confidence, right, as a quarterback. I can make that throw. Okay, but one more progression, and you can make this other one. Or you're so confident, and he didn't see the linebacker on the pick at the 12-yard line. And a chance when you have a drive and put that game away, you kept Mississippi State in that game. Okay, now here's where the student of the game, Connor Wegman, comes in and says, okay, I can't do that for my team. As a leader, I can't do that. But I'm with you when it comes to throwing the ball. Interesting, you were talking Rams-Vikings tonight. My partner is Dave Elmendorf, who played at A&M, the All-American, now in the Hall of Fame. And for a decade, he was a safety with the Rams. And I asked him, I said, when a quarterback gets it out that quickly, and he said, Andrew, it's the difference between getting your fingertips on the ball and an incompletion and a complete pass. And that's that. I think that little bit of quickness and arm strength of Connor Wegman. And let's be honest, I think the wideouts are better for A&M this year. And I think they're a little deeper. I think having Noah Thomas, I think having Jadae Walker, I think having Cyrus Allen, and it goes a little deeper than that. And they're tight ends. Look, it's not Mason Taylor. They don't have Mason Taylor at tight end like LSU does, who's going to be a first-round draft pick. They don't have Kyron Lacy, you know, who an 8-yard completion becomes possibly an explosive play, or the band starts playing because he's in the end zone. Kyron Lacy, to me, is what Anaya Smith was. You know, you mentioned Devon Achan in the past. Aggies have had some really good running backs, he and Isaiah Spiller, and that's what Le'Veon is. But you have that confidence for that. But he's got to be more solid, because in a game like Saturday's, one turnover could be the difference, right? Throughout this entire game, you don't know what play might be the difference. And that's what Mike Elko is telling not only Connor Wegman, but the rest of his team. You've got to stay focused for 60 minutes. We may have 150 plays in this game. Which one is going to be the difference? Make sure that you've got your effort. You've got your strain. Make sure you're grinding in that. I love what Mike says. You can only take care of the 6 inches in front of your nose. And that's been a nice thing. Instead of looking big picture, focus on the 6 inches in front of your helmet. And they've done that nicely so far.
Nick, thinking about the matchup on the defensive side and for LSU, we saw it last week. Landon Jackson, who was a former LSU player, transferred to Arkansas, went up against Will Campbell. Okay,
yeah.
he got the best of him a couple times, and then after that, Will say, enough of that, I'm going to mash you. And he played a lot of physical football, and then we didn't hear too much about Landon after that. This week again, Nick Skorton, and I watched him play last year at Purdue and saw his maturation. I don't know who has worked with him in the offseason, but he has got a little different move, counter move, and it's a hard inside cut right to the quarterback. He's normally played at left defensive end, which would mean he would go up against Emory Jones. That every scout in America is watching that, because we know kind of where those guys are going to be playing next year. But that is a game within the game. Nick Skorton going up, and I think mainly probably against Emory Jones.
Yeah, and when you talk to our scouts, they talk about the two tackles, Jones and Campbell. One of our scouts who's worked with the Cowboys, the Raiders, and the Steelers, he says, Will Campbell, that's a first rounder. Mason Taylor's a first rounder. He goes, I love their wide receivers. This is how much he loves the wide receivers. He goes, yeah, even their, you know what I mean when I say average, the ones that you don't talk about, could be third or fourth rounders right now. They're not even finished with their careers. That's the game within the game, right? And I think that's where it's going to be won and lost. And it's going to be a reason why the Aggies can run the ball or Connor can have success is if the Aggie offensive line can keep Savion Jones out of the backfield, right? What is it, 22 sacks in the last five games? And can you get that pressure? What Nick Scorton has done, what Cassius Howe has done on the ends, what Shamar Stewart, another end, has done because they rotate. And I think Shamar Turner there in the middle is a key, key member of that defensive line. You can't just key on Nick Scorton on that D-line. The one who's worked with him, by the way, is Sean Spencer, who came over with Jay Bateman when Mike Elko hired them both from Florida. And Sean Spencer is Coach Chaos, as they call him. And in his background, he's a New York Giants defensive line coach. He knows what it takes to be in the NFL. So he's the one who's worked. Look, we've been blessed in the past, I have to be honest. Elijah Robinson, who's now the defensive coordinator at Syracuse, was here and worked with Mike Elko on that D-line. And Terry Price, and I hate saying the late Terry Price because he played here at A&M and passed away a couple seasons ago. You were blessed to have really good defensive linemen. And you guys know, the front four dictates what the back seven can do. And I'm with you. It will be such a matchup. Look, it's going to be Savion Jones and Trey Zun, who's been outstanding. And on the right side, it's going to be big 6'7" Demetrius Crownover. And he's going to go up against Braden Swinson. Like, I'm with you. These little matchups in a matchup that most fans won't look at, I think, dictate how the game gets played on Saturday.
Drew, one name to keep in mind. He's been a one-man gang for 3 weeks. Whit Weeks. And, okay, his brother Wes, a little bit older, but it's like the Weeks and Weeks law firm. But, man,
they put you in jail, don't they? Good, you're in jail, baby.
and here's the best part, Andrew. I talked to Whit in the summer. He's like, my little brother's better than both of us. And I was like, what? You've watched LSU, that Whit Weeks guy, he has got his GPS turned into the ball carrier every play. And he's a playmaker not only against the run, also in coverage if they send him on the blitz. And we didn't see that, and then all of a sudden Harold Perkins gets hurt, okay, and you lose him for the season. And then Whit Weeks becomes the man, and he has been absolutely awesome for 3 weeks.
Isn't that something? Because Harold Perkins, let's be honest, probably the best athlete, right? And this is not a shot. Please don't. Here's the analogy to me. I remember a young Edgerrin Cooper at Texas A&M. Mike was still here. Tyler Santucci was the linebacker coach. Mike brought Tyler to Duke. Duke stayed. He's still with Manny Diaz as the DC there. But there was a play that Edgerrin made as a young player. He was freelancing. And Tyler said, if you do that this Saturday, it's a 12-yard gain. We were playing someone out of conference. It might have been New Mexico or New Mexico State. He said, Edge, if you do that in the SEC and freelance, it's a touchdown. Now, fast forward, Edgerrin Cooper last year was able to gather all of that, still be freakishly athletic to become a second-round pick, and he's in Green Bay, right? That's where I think Perkins is, that athleticism. But when you bring in Whit Weeks, 70 tackles, are you kidding me? It's double-digit tackles, and he threatened 20 tackles in one of those weeks. When you have that, when you're solid there, right, that means the defensive line's doing their job. Look, if that D-line isn't making the tackle, and they've got a lot of tackles, and that's not always the case. Sometimes they're the cloggers, and they allow someone else, but that means your linebackers. So you're not even getting to that second level, right, when you're linebackers. So that's the frustration. We can't run. Let's try passing. Well, guess what? Greg Penn made the interception last year when the Aggies were there, and it turned that game around in the second half. And Jaden Daniels and Malik Nabers went nuts. LSU wins that game last year. That's what I mean. Can you be solid? When you have that solid linebacking core, and I give the Aggies a ton of credit. That's what Torian York, who started at middle linebacker last year as a true freshman out of Temple, Texas, and now you add Scooby Williams, who had an outstanding game last week against Mississippi State. I really think these teams are so similar. There's going to be some positions where each gets the advantage, but from the season records to how they play to what they want to do on the field to how they can turn you over or get you off the field on third down, they're very similar. And let's add
Mike Elko was Brian Kelly's defensive coordinator at Notre Dame for a year before he came to Texas A&M, and now they're both in the SEC, and Brian's always had success wherever he has been. To me, that just it just makes the matchup even more fascinating. But I'm with you guys. Just looking at those positions, you're going to see an awful lot of players you're going to be playing on Sundays in the future.
Andrew, definitely appreciate your time. Thanks for all the insights, and have a great call Saturday night. I know it's going to be a wild one.
Thank you, Andrew.
Thank you so much for having me, guys.
All righty, take care.
That was the voice of Texas A&M Aggies, Andrew Monaco. You can hear, obviously, the call from our side of things, the LSU Sports Radio Network, 6:30 Saturday night on WWL and the Odyssey app. We're going to take a break. Be right back with more sports talk. Right after this, we are live at the Treasure Chest Casino. Who dat? We are closing out the 4 o'clock hour of sports talk right now. Want to let everyone know the Saints injury report has come out. Full practice today, folks. Great news. Cesar Ruiz, Connor McGovern, Chris Olave, Taysom Hill. We'll get into that and even more right after the top of the hour news break. Stay tuned right here on WWL.